La selección china de personas que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur de Nijir Dilamujian para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a una atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got 3/4 of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly to annul the legal nonprofit status of Fundacion Xaquiquetzal and 14 other non-governmental organizations. President.
And next up on the stream of free radio at freakradio.org or on the archives at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides, the June 16th, 2022 edition. Not quite sure how long or short this one is going to be, at least in terms of how much new stuff we're putting in it. As you know, we are padding a lot of these broadcasts, or filling them, depending on your taste and your perspective, with flashbacks. That is to say, stuff from earlier shows, often which have not been aired since the original broadcast, and which, in some respects, are very ancient. In other respects, I think, tell us something about what's happening now and give us an interesting point of comparison and contrast, and also, of course, historical understanding for those of us who are history buffs. So today, Thursday the 16th, is the usual day for the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, which I canceled after initially trying to get together an agenda and finding, I'm not sure if it's after effects of, who is it, COVID? I don't think I've ever had COVID. I've never quite gotten a positive test whenever I went in for one, but I have felt ill in the last few days, on and off. So here's what I can give to you, or some of what I can give to you anyway, and let's see if it meets the grade.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So, first off, I'm going to have to admit I didn't spend much time or energy listening to the Santa Cruz shitty council meeting of the 14th, which came and went mercifully. I did hear some of it, and I just happened to be able to tune in, and it was actually circumstantial because it really didn't happen because one would have advance notice. It was on the agenda. It was at a time certain where you could actually anticipate it and tune in to hear it or to watch it or Of course, you couldn't tune in to comment on it unless you want to go pound on the windows of the city council chambers, and then you might have probably wouldn't have heard you anyway, but and there would be only two people in the chambers, probably the city manager and the city clerk, or maybe just the city clerk and her assistant, manipulating the whole thing from Zoom, which is where the meeting went out, even though Civic Auditorium presumably was available, even though COVID is, you know, and various cases of illness are being reported, not necessarily COVID, but illness, and who knows, perhaps COVID, and certainly COVID transmissibility, even though not necessarily toxic or hospitalizing or ICU involvement, and certainly not fatality involvement, though two people have died in the last week, both over 70, I believe, and with additional conditions. Still, it could have been opened up to city council with adequate distancing inside the council or chairs set up outside. I always say this as I report on these city council meetings or I talk about the upcoming meetings, because I think it indicates the continuing lack of community demand, because that's the only way we're going to get this, that city council respect the reality of its being a representative body that has to be accessible to the community. And they're not. And they, I don't think they were when they were open, frankly, in the sense that you could come and watch them do their thing and be disciplined and threatened if you spoke out of turn or spoke for any longer than their two-minute allowance or made a disrespectful gesture. And you couldn't get anything on the agenda unless you happened to have a special entree to one of the city council members. Anyway, this particular bit of the city council you're about to hear is what I've often described as the most important part, which is the city manglers or the city wranglers account. He's the city manager, of course, Matt Huffaker, and he's the guy with the power and the highest salary and the person who's been authorized to make all kinds of decisions, you know, by Zoom session that the community could register a few squeaks of protest on, but at least has chosen not to go beyond that. And it's unrealistic to expect the community to rise up and demand democratic rights when there's already in place a structure, both at the city, the state, and the federal level, not only of police forces, but just a bureaucratic trips and traps and nets that makes it hard to exercise even a mass opinion on a strong basis. There are those who I call them, or some others call them, and I think it's accurate, the oligarchs, the oligarchy, those with wealth, those with power, who essentially have their fingers on the key choke points. And, of course, this is all pretty vague and may have a conspiratorial ring to it, but I tend to believe that money usually dictates elections, and even when it doesn't, the elections themselves run by the party system. There's this kind of internal back-and-forth cooperation between parties, political parties, Democratic and Republican Party mostly. There's not much else in the way of other parties, and when there is, you can't often tell much difference because they want to team up with more powerful parties under the theory that if only they get more power, they can do more good. I mean, it's a nice theory. Unfortunately, it tends to mean mainly they just become the instruments of an existing power structure which doesn't serve the good at all, really. So all of this introduction is about the city manager's report, and some of it is on the election, which I'm not going to really talk about. I'm not very well informed about it. I haven't informed myself very well about it. I did vote, somewhat to my disgust in a way, because I feel that, as I shouted out, it only encourages them when you join in their plebiscites, giving you the illusion of democracy without the substance. You don't get to choose the issues. You don't get to vote real choices on the issues. But you have to claim somehow that you've been given a choice, and therefore some would say you shouldn't complain. I would say the only basis you really shouldn't complain if you vote, because under those circumstances, you voted for the people that are making those choices, and so they're your men and your women. So, yeah, is all I can say. Anyway, the city manager gave a report on so-called homelessness response. At least that's what the placard said when it came time to see it, if you were looking at it on a computer or on community TV, if you were allowed to see it. Much of the dialogue I found was cut off and jerky. And I actually sent an email to the city clerk administrator, Bonnie Bush, advising her that was the case. In the past, she's responded saying, oh, well, we fixed it or we're working on it. This time, I got nothing from her. Although, frankly, I don't think I bothered to spend much more time watching it. So maybe I got my due with that particular doo-doo. Anyway, the homelessness response you're going to hear was described by the Santa Cruz Urinal. That's my name for the Santa Cruz Sentinel, the thin pseudo-newspaper that kind of hands out police department press releases and so forth, and has 8 or 10 pages of stories of some kind, mostly reprints from the AP pushing war propaganda. That's at least how I tend to view it. But in any case, Jessica York did have a front page story. I think it was either today, Thursday the 16th of June, or yesterday. I think it was yesterday, actually, which described some aspects of what the city mangler, Matt Huffaker, put out. It's really, you know, it's perhaps better to call him not the city mangler, because he's not actively mangling. He is simply not taking the constructive steps and using the money and that he has at his disposal. And also, he is obscuring what's going on in terms of the real pain, suffering, and abuses that are a consequence of how homeless people along the benchlands and in the various other encampments that, with his, in the absence of his objection, surely, but I would say also often with his support, have been mowed down, destroyed, property seized, people forced to cram themselves into the benchlands. And this whole phenomenon of claiming that there is shelter for people is both a function of the Community and Coalition on Homelessness, I should say, California Homeless Union, forced activity because of the injunction of December of 2020 and January 2021 that eventually set up the benchlands, although the benchlands were earlier set up by fiat by the earlier city manager, Martin Bernal. Again, no public process. There was a lot of wailing and gnarling and hair-pulling about how bad and evil council members like Christopher Crone and Drew Glover were before they were recalled for not having a public process. In fact, of course, they sought some kind of immediate action, but also a public process, and they were smashed by the majority, the Martine Watkins, Justin Cummings majority at that time. And instead, the reins were handed over to Martine Bernal, as even when there wasn't a COVID emergency and they hadn't passed an emergency resolution. And he was the one, along with Mills, then police chief, who decided to set up the benchlands without any kind of public comment. And then it was done and in the actual benchlands area. It started in San Lorenzo Park and the Upper Park, including the benchlands, and was moved to the benchlands in a... what I didn't like at the time, because the benchlands is a dangerous place to be in the sense that it's a floodplain, and it did indeed flood somewhat during the winter. Nobody lost their lives, but many people were afraid that was about to happen, and it was only through help and not the help of city workers that helped people avoid this. In fact, they were threatened with arrest if they placed their property in their tents and left them there on the upper higher ground while they went to get the rest of their property. They had to agree to move it immediately into the garage lest potential, I don't know, swimmers through the storm see them in the upper duck pond area consider that their parklands were being despoiled or something like that. Or maybe it was simply just a kind of bureaucratic rigidity, but in any case, that kind of cruelty is what's been going on for 30 years in the city and in other cities, but we only can address where we are, really, in direct ways, and that's what I tend to do, though I do mention stuff that's happening elsewhere. The homelessness response, yes, we're actually going to get to it. That's what you're going to hear now. This is Matt Huffaker talking, and I'll let him talk a bit, and then I'll try to, I may be intruding with what I regard as factual corrections, as far as I know them, or sarcastic comments, when I can't control myself. So let's see how we do here.
I'm going to provide a few updates on our homelessness response work, more specifically the ongoing work that all of our city departments are collaborating on, along with our homelessness response team, on the Benchlands closure. I know this is a topic that our community has been, has had close interest in. Wanted to provide a few updates. Slide, please. I am pleased to share that our homelessness response team, along with support from all of our city departments, has been successful in fully standing up the City Overlook Shelter armory space. That includes 75 spaces, 50 of which are occupied, and 10 spaces that are being kept available on demand for those that need them. The team is also working on options of really maximizing the full capacity that we have up at the Overlook space. And, of course, this is in addition to the River Street shelter that we've also been operating.
I'm interrupting here somewhat clumsily. So during this segment, the city manager is turned to a display, which I'll describe in a moment. But before that, note the unspoken reality here that I always try to bring out when these figures about, oh, we're trying to clear the benchlands. That is, in fact, the main purpose of this entire objective. It's not to provide real shelter for the homeless population of Santa Cruz so that, at the very least, Santa Cruz can be legal in terms of the Martin versus Boise decision. I mean, maybe they're hoping for a Supreme Court intervention, which is not at all beyond the bounds of possibility. But so far, the Supreme Court, even with a conservative majority during the Trump era, has upheld Martin versus Boise, the decision that says no ticketing of people for camping outside and other similar activity unless you have shelter for them to go to. And what they're trying to do when they say, well, we're going to have some, 50, 60 beds or 60 cot spaces or sleeping bag layout lines up in the, the Overlook area. Now, I think the Overlook is the new name for the Golflands campground that the county ran and essentially dispersed, sending people to the Benchlands, which is no longer, you'll hear Huffaker talk about receiving people. And that, of course, was, it sounds like, to some extent, done to placate the council majority, particularly Donna Myers, who is afraid people will come back to the Benchlands when they find that the conditions that are prevailing by city management with the Association of Faith Communities so oppressive, prison-like, and or simply demeaning and humiliating and not befitting or just confining in ways that are not really necessary other than to give the city an excuse to round people up and put people in a small area, not with the eye of helping them at all, but with the eye of getting them out of sight and ultimately out of town, which is, in spite of all their rhetoric, their objective and has been for decades. It hasn't changed. It would be wonderful if it had. It would be nice. And I might even, some have suggested that Matt Huffaker actually has that objective, although I think we might want to interview Wes White, who was keeping an eye on Huffaker when he was city manager of Watsonville immediately prior to this appointment as city manager in Santa Cruz. But I don't know. We'll see about that. Anyway, they're keeping 10 beds open, supposedly, or 10 places open, so the police can say, see, we have a place for you to go. So get over there or else. We'll take your property. We'll hold it indefinitely until because we'll be accusing you of a crime violating the new camping ordinance, essentially the new sleeping ban, which is the sleeping ban without the words sleeping in it. But anything you use for sleeping, anytime you're caught out with your stuff, and they can show that that there are 10 beds somewhere for the, 1,000 to 1,500 homeless people outside, at least half of them without any kind of shelter in any of these programs, even when the programs that are falsely called pathways to housing, are actually available. They can then charge people with crimes and take their property and hold it as evidence of the crime and all that sort of thing, which, of course, is ridiculous, costly, cruel, but it suits the fantasies of the right-wing cabal that's in power in the city and the right-wing mentality that is kind of sweeping the country as people wonder where all the money went for homeless activity, homeless prevention, by which they really mean we don't want those damn fuckers in our neighborhood. We don't want to see people wretchedly in poverty. It frightens us, and it also, it's kind of degrading. So get rid of them somehow. So to get back to this, the presentation he had, it's a circular graph, and it's divided into five parts. Community safety, I barely read the small print, building community and partnerships, permanent affordable and supportive housing, basic support services, care and stewardship. These are the City of Santa Cruz action areas, you see, all in different colors, I might add. And then you also have some of the actual word rhetoric. City Overlook Shelter is fully operational, which means it's operational for 60 or less people outside. And again, I have to admit I haven't been up there, but you're not allowed to go up there unless you go up on their van. You're not allowed to visit people that are inside the encampment. It's a kind conditions which I don't think most of us would accept and wouldn't consider dignified or fair, even if we were poor. So the idea that you have all these requirements, it's not just a matter of being non-rule compliant. It's whether the rules have anything to do with not just helping people. People just may want to have a place to crash for the night, you know, if necessary. That's what people who are very poor did sometimes in large cities. They crashed in hotels. And before they were, and then they went out and tried to find jobs and so forth. Those kinds of conditions, those kinds of circumstances, don't exist much anymore. You have to either claim you are ill, with a mental illness, with a drug problem, and you have to, in essence, degrade yourself or represent yourself as something less than a whole human being. I'm not suggesting that people with disabilities are less than whole human beings, but if you are, they're suggesting you require assistance, and that the real problem isn't that they've destroyed the housing through funneling all the money up to rich people and rich speculators, which is the perennial situation for capitalism, I think, if you look at it throughout the last 300 years. But rather your fault. You made a mistake, so you have only yourself to blame, and that's the old endless story. We have the good news, and of course it's not good news, that the county is, quote, demobilizing the Armory and the Oceana Hotel. That means dumping people out without recourse as to where to go. And then we have attacks on park yard, which require increased security. And this is a concern of the council and the city manager that somehow six vehicles were burned by that were owned by Parks and Rec in their yard. And whether it was clear that it was sprayed before or after the vehicles were burned, there were some things were sprayed that said things like stop the sweeps, meaning the sweeping of homeless people in encampments, such as has been going on for the last year, and actually for the last 30 years in this area, but particularly recently. And again, I was realizing just recently, we don't really know if this wasn't an accident. In fact, they say suspected arson. They don't have any real indication. At least Huffaker didn't present it that there was arson. You're going to hear him talking about that in a moment. And then the closure of the benchlands, which, of course, is the big objective of the city council in order to prove its credentials to the money donors who elected them, if they can get rid of these homeless people and provide a nice new right-wing solution to homeless people, which is the same old solution, hide out or get out. But they're saying, and Huffaker is being quite realistic about, more realistic, I don't know how quite realistic, that's perhaps a little too generous, but he was saying it depends on staffing, site control, and safety, which I guess he's saying, he's playing into the metaphor that homeless people in the benchlands are dangerous. I've heard this trope used a lot, even by homeless people, not because they've had any bad experiences, but because I suspect it's because they've heard it. And when you walk through there, and I've been talking, you probably remember Brent Adams talking about this, the footbridge services guy, who claims he goes to the benchlands every day and sometimes twice a day. He doesn't find that. He's found it's far more peaceful. And he's a man who has said, in essence, in the past, it's just a bunch of drug dealers, or 95% of the people are using substances. He's pretty cautious about trying to describe it in a non-judgmental way, but he does claim that's what's going on, at least in a significant part. But he does now say it seems to become a lot calmer, and people have sort of established their own groups. And another of the closure dependencies that Huffaker talks about in this display is adequate amount of shelter. And that, of course, is the issue. And that's the issue that the city council did not ask any strong questions about, because they know full well, including the great liberal minority on there, Sandy Brown and Justin Cummings, that there has no shelter been provided. All the talk about cooperating with the county and getting federal assistance and working out programs and that's the main things I find myself remembering, has gone nowhere. I mean, it was a form of give us some more time to think about it. It's kind of the Susie O'Hara solution, which is it's going to get better. It's getting better. We're doing good. We're moving right along. And it's just not true. And whether it's a direct lie to a court about shelter availability or whether it is a lie to the city council, but not really a lie because you're putting it in language that could be interpreted as this is what we're hoping for. And if nobody questions you about where it's going, and if the people who do question you then get recalled for making those kinds of questions, then you have nothing to worry about. And you can continue with this mythology. Anyway, let's hear a little more.
Well, I am pleased to share that our homelessness response team, along with support from all of our city departments, has been successful in fully standing up the city overlook shelter up the former armory space. That includes 75 spaces, 50 of which are occupied, and 10 spaces that are being kept available on demand for those that need them. The team is also working on options of really maximizing the full capacity that we have up at the overlook space. And, of course, this...
And remember, the 10 spaces are being kept aside not for those who need them, but for when the police officers need them to force people to move from areas they don't want people to be in. That's how it's been in other cities, And I haven't got evidence that that's exactly how they're using it here. And this might be a much more magnanimous administration, oh wondrous day, but I don't think so. They are trying to find the basis for enforcing the CSO, the community camping services and standards ordinance, which was passed last summer, and which provides draconian penalties for not carrying your stuff around with you all day and not getting into the programs that they want you to get into, even though those programs will only serve 150 people. It's a suggestion. They want to put a no vacancy sign on Santa Cruz. That's what Donna Myers later says, and we may play what she says. It's depressing for me to do that, but I may do that anyway. Let's see as we continue where we get to here. And here we go.
Is in addition to the River Street shelter that we've also been operating, and in conjunction with the ongoing conversations we're having with Housing Matters in the county to stand up additional shelter space. So that work.
And this is misleading. Yes, the city did fund the River Street shelter, but it's been closed down, as I understand it. I don't think it's open now. And unless he has new information about this, and I have not heard this from other sources, so I would ask people who have direct knowledge of whether the River Street shelter, which was actually the earliest shelter in Santa Cruz that was open regularly, albeit for four people, and they kind of shared responsibility with the county. That was an example of the wondrous city-county cooperation that Donna Myers and Cynthia Matthews and David Terrazas and Martine Watkins always rave about and look for. And Justin Cummings came in, and he rode that horse in as well, as he rode the same horses that helped drag away Glover and Crone. So, anyway.
We'll continue to be ongoing. And I want to applaud the efforts of Larry and Wally and our homelessness response team to continue pursuing all the shelter options that we have available to us. There's also been some information shared recently in the media regarding the county's demobilization of their COVID-funded Armory shelter and the Oceana Hotel shelter.
And what he's saying is important here because the county is dumping everybody out of their hotels, the COVID protective hotel structure that was happening, as well as the other shelters that were being used there. They are preferring to spend their money on other things. Now, perhaps to my chagrin, I'm not a particularly clear advocate of what the county is doing. And hopefully once I get the energy and interest in doing it, I'll try to put on for your education some people who may be willing to crunch those figures and look into that. I haven't yet gotten to those folks, or they haven't gotten back to me. But the whole pressure and reality here that I think people should be realizing is that more and more homeless people are being released to the streets, as seems to be happening all over the state in terms of the destruction of various campgrounds, Petaluma, Sausalito, San Rafael, and other places, where I guess folks want to be able to return to the illusion that they can pretend things are just like they were before COVID, which is to say, if only those homeless people stay barely visible, we'll be providing them with token shelter. That's been the watchword. At this point, let's take a musical break.
Hi, I'm Wild Bill Bailout, the Bard of the Bankers. Whose streets? Mine. That was easy.
Once I built a mortgage, made it run, made it race against prime. Once I built a mortgage, now it's done. Brother, can you spell subprime?
My country's not for sale. My country's not for sale. My country's not for sale. My
Yes, another world is possible, but it is illegal. And let's be clear, pepper spraying is covered by the First Amendment. And yes, pepper spray is a vegetable, so eat it.
Winter's going to take care of the global warming anyway. People say we don't plan. We plan. It's socialism, but we do it anyway.
Yes, I received your email yesterday about the day the system broke. When you asked me, was I going to fix it? Everybody.
And that was a small sample of Dave Lippmann, which is accompanied by videos. If you go to his website, Dave Lippmann, that's two P's, one N, .com, Dave Lippmann, LIPPMAN.com. And he plays various characters. He plays himself. He does Wild Bill Bailout. That's the banker guy you were hearing. And then he does George Shrubb, who's the singing CIA agent. You're going to be hearing more of him. But I know you're eager to get back to old Matt Huffaker, so I'll return to you to the most powerful city official, and let's see what plans he has for the benchlands.
As part of that work, the county is in the process of and has responsibility for finding alternative shelter locations for the folks that are still utilizing those shelter sites. They're in the process of moving through that work as we are also standing up shelter.
And
I'm also...
Why one would think that the county would be any more responsible than the city in finding shelter for people that they're displacing, as the city has never done in it to any meaningful extent, is where we enter the fabrication zone. As if we never left it. You know, it's been there all along. But he's saying that the county will take care of the people that it's sending out because they have a responsibility to do that. Why is the city going to sue them if they don't? I don't think so. That would be quite a novel approach.
Unfortunately, I have to share with the community that over the last couple of weeks we had a significant attack on our park yard. This was a targeted attack associated with our ongoing homelessness response work, and specifically our planned closure of the Benchlands camp. This attack resulted in over $500,000 in damages, the destruction of several of our parks vehicles, and has really added to the sense of concern for our employees' safety and the safety of our community.
It's interesting that Jessica York describes it as a suspected arson, whereas old Matt Huffaker here is calling it a targeted attack, suggesting that there is, you know, maybe there was a missive issued, a manifesto, a threat made public, you know, stop going after the homeless or else. Now, it's true there were some spray-painted slogans found. Were those slogans issued by the people who did if somebody did do it, and it wasn't an accident of some kind, who did the arson, if it was arson, or did it happen afterward? I at first had assumed, as I guess maybe Huffaker is assuming, or maybe he knows, has more evidence he's not revealing, that it was a targeted attack. That is to say that some people were just fucking fed up with the city's lies about this stuff, And the fact that 400 people, 300 to 400 people's lives, well-being, and property are going to be in danger because the city is refusing to provide, if not the resources, at least the honesty about what's going on here. And so I leave it to you to figure out what's really going on. And if you have any news about it, please give me a call on the Huff line at 831-423-4833.
So as we move through our planned closure of the benchlands, the closure really, as a reminder, depends on a number of factors. That includes our ability to staff as well as hire contractors to support the closure and support work that has to happen along with the planned closure.
And it's a little unclear why you need hired contractors to clear the benchlands. I at first had thought, well, maybe they mean to create alternate campgrounds. I mean, that would make a sense. But, of course, since he doesn't mention any of that yet, I think there may be a mention of eventually some additional shelters somewhere, but it's not in any way commensurate with the timeline of closing the campground. He moves it from July to the end of the summer, which August, September, whatever you want to call it. Then I realized what he may be talking about is paying police agencies to make sure that people who are being sent into different programs, even those people, or the people who are cleared away from the bench lines, don't come back. Because that was a key point, and you'll hear this if I continue to play it, with city council members like Donna Myers. Or, you know, what have you done to make sure these people don't come back to the benchlands? We don't want them disturbing the pigeon feeders and dog walkers that are coming through. You know, that's not what she says, but what she means. Anyway, here's more.
That has been an ongoing challenge, and these concerns around safety have only exacerbated those challenges as we work through that with our collective departments. It's also underscored the need to really redouble our efforts to ensure that both inside and outside the camp are safe. So we have been
This notion of safety being a big deal, a bigger deal, let's say, than it customarily is the usual trope of right-wing politicians running for office or seeking to extract or bump off in their own way, politically, those who are in office. That's how Boudin, the district attorney in San Francisco, got dumped through false claims of a crime wave. It's a way of rousing people with false fears and dehumanizing other people as being simply part of a broader criminal group. It's always been done with homeless people.
Evaluating the process for closure, looking at ways we can help to ensure site control and safety of the camp as we move through the closure process.
Site control and safety of the camp, he says. Site control means keeping folks away who left. And safety of the camp sounds like a bone being thrown or a nice cosmetic facade that's being put up to suggest that there is a real need for some police power in the camp to protect people in the camp. He isn't mentioning any particular crime problem in the camp. In fact, that's one of the things people have commented on. It doesn't seem to be a lot of crime. I mean, there's a lot of theft back and forth between desperate people taking each other's stuff because the city is too cheap too nearsighted to provide necessary things. It reminds me of what's going on in San Francisco, that because people are stealing from grocery stores, this somehow means there's a massive crime problem and that we need more people to protect the rights of the grocery stores. You obviously need to find ways to distribute food that gets to people that need it. Otherwise, they take it.
We've also engaged in conversations with the county sheriff. Due to how stretched thin our police department is, we're down essentially 30% of our officers as things currently stand. And the county sheriff has been willing to engage in conversations around how they can help increase safety.
Now, I would hope that this fund the police plea by Huffaker is simply sort of a fluffy-wuffy wave to the city council majority that's so of whom who are so beloved of the police and who so love the police. But I'm afraid it because he has such power, he may believe his own flattery here, and I fear he is just a big pro police as solution kind of guy. That one doesn't work.
If a camp with more public safety presence as we move through the closure process. And then, of course, as I mentioned earlier, almost all of our departments in some shape or form are assisting with standing up adequate shelters. So there are alternative locations for folks that are in the Benchman's camp.
So notice the rhetoric here. Assisting in finding alternate shelter. They don't have alternate shelter. It's not clear how they're assisting people to find alternate shelter. It's a series of sort of verbal gymnastics here, or carefully chosen words that can't really be used to trip someone up later and say, hey, weren't you lying when you said that? Nah, not really. I mean, after all, they're running around. They've got open inquiries about open shelter. We're saying, we're looking for shelter. Hey, you see any shelter over there? Uh-huh. That's what they're doing. But in fact, how much money is being put into that? Who's doing it? Has it been done the last three or four times in the last decade or two, and it hasn't been found? And in fact, isn't it going to be in a sort of a useless and futile quest if the money that is being spent by city council on other projects that benefit high-end contractors, developers, speculators, isn't redirected? But, of course, we don't hear Matt talking about those issues now, do we?
To be relocated to. But with these recent developments and these concerning incidents impacting the safety of our employees, we are reevaluating the overall closure timeline, and we are anticipating that that will extend beyond July into late summer. So
here it is, the final and the disclosure. The timeline for closure is going to be reevaluated and may extend into August or late summer. Again, all these conditionals that don't say, you know, close the campground in July. Are you kidding? You know, we knew this 6 months ago. We knew this 9 months ago. We knew this before this whole dialogue began. But did we honestly discuss it with you? Did we bring it out? No, certainly not. Now, Huffaker wasn't, of course, a part of the dialogue, but his lieutenant, Butler, was. And Butler knew about it, too. And he has delayed talking about the costs of producing any kind of additional shelter and how much shelter that would be continually. So it's up to Huffaker, who hired this guy or takes him on, regardless of his evasive and misleading kind of history here. The blame falls upon the guy at the top, and he is the person who should be held accountable. It's the reason we had a coffee clutch talking about him, as well as his lieutenants, Larry Mwale and Lee Butler.
This continues to be a real Herculean lift as we move through closure of what has now been a camp that's been in place for over 2 years.
As we move through a closure, this gives you the impression that they're all ready to close. It's just there's a few ends to be tied up, you know. But it's obvious the only amount of space they have are 20 or 30 more spaces in the lookout, maybe an opening for the armory, if they can get it. And then he said to me, I think, at the police department pufferama that they held at the Civic Auditorium a couple of weeks ago, that they were planning to add, oh, I don't know, I think it was more shelter space inside the Coral Street complex, the funding matters complex, you know, the housing matters, as they call it. And so there's a few more, but, you know, it doesn't even cover half of the people in the benchlands. And they've all, you'll also hear him mentioning Homeward Bound and getting people out of town and sending them back to their relatives. These are all so-called solutions that have been touted in the past. What they really are, they're a cover for police action to terrorize people into leaving town, or at least appearing to leave town.
So we ask for some patience as we try to move through this process and help define these individuals adequate, safe.
Again, move through this process. But there isn't any process for the majority of people in the benchlands, or they would have shelter for them to go to, and they don't. So why is he lying? Well, I know why he's lying, but the community has to call him out on it and has to defend people once they are being pressed by the resources he gets from the sheriff's department and the police department and other allied police agencies, if that's who are called in, to resist this sort of mass deportation of people to nowhere. Of course, it also depends on what the people themselves want to do. And I don't know that there's been much in the way of mass meetings. People tend to stay in their own groups there, or at least groups that are supposed to be organizing, like my own group, HUF, and the California Homeless Union, aren't, as far as I know. They're talking about it. They're saying we'll wait until there's an actual enforcement of the CSSO, the Camping Services and Standards Ordinance. But it's already being used as a threat. It has been used as a threat to move people into the benchlands when the other campgrounds were being destroyed 4 months ago.
Alternative shelter options. Next slide. As the council knows, we have also been working towards standing up a safe parking program as part of our oversized vehicle ordinance.
And here, to me, Huffaker gives away the game at the very beginning as he puts up this new safe parking Tier 3 slide on the screen and talks about it in the same breath as the OVO, the Oversized Vehicle Ordinance, which is being challenged at the Coastal Commission level by a number of organizations. But the point of any kind of shelter, it's been my belief and been my, well, my conclusion so far, is only an attempt to fend off legal challenges. It has nothing to do with any attempt to supply real shelter for the majority of people who are in these situations, but just enough to make it appear that they are meeting legal requirements, which are rather vague at this point anyway. So if you look at this tier description, it says a contract on with the AFC consent agenda today, and that actually was a part of the meeting that I may examine, the city council meeting from 2 days ago on Sunday, but frankly I doubt it. I didn't think I'd get this far, and I probably talked too much about this program and interrupted this guy too many times, but I'll probably continue to do so. The Safe Parking Tier 3 slide says 24/7 program with wraparound, supportive services, all the right words, and then, of course, referencing no real tangible objects that actually exist at the present time. And then accommodate approximately 22 vehicles at a time. Again, this is not something that currently exists, as you'll hear him say, but it's something that the City Council has proposed to exist. And, of course, there's no indication throughout his report of how many vehicles are actually in the condition that are going to be needing either the Tier 3 services, which seem to be you can park and come and go and come back and forth, the Tier 2 services, which are a couple of parking lots downtown where you can stay overnight, and the Tier 1 service, which supposedly exists now, but I haven't heard anybody using it, which is the police department services where you can go and park there if you get a police department okay, which I'm not, I have no way, I don't know right now what exactly that would entail, and who knows, maybe I'll get together the motivation to find out. I think I should. Then there's also the Armory Overlook location. I'm not sure how that's going to tie in, but let's hear what the good city manager has to say about that. Maybe we'll learn why.
To help ensure that individuals that are in our community looking for safe places to sleep, safe places to park, that we have a number of options available to them. In fact, on today's agenda, we have a contract with the Association of Faith Communities to put a contract in place to provide 24/7 programming with wraparound supportive services. This program will accommodate approximately 22 vehicles at any given time, and the program will be located in tandem with the shelter that we already have established at the Armory and the Overlook location. So with the council's approval today, we anticipate standing these services up.
So this safe parking tier looks like it's again, it's going to be way out of town, up at the Armory. I'm not sure whether it involves people being able to come and go or not. I'm not sure what kind of requirements or bars, whether it's a high bar or a low bar. And I know that people running it, the Association of Faith Communities, has not been well regarded by at least some of the folks who have come to the Huff meetings in terms of their requirements. Indeed, even the erstwhile potential manager, Steve Plaich, didn't have much positive to say about the John Jacobs, is his name, the guy's running the program. He's declined to answer my questions about it, Jacobs has. His own sort of 3 to 5 vehicle program at different churches to find out what the requirements are and so forth. And you don't find out much when you go online. You can find, if you go to Brent Adams' Facebook page for Footbridge Services, which is what he runs out there near Denny's, out there at 150 Felker Street. Even he, well, it's not, it doesn't look too good for this program, but some would say, you know, take what you can, do what's possible, patch up the problems later, except if this is the excuse for going after and driving all vehicles out of town that aren't covered by the program and that don't meet the requirements of the program. And since there hasn't been a real study of the vehicles, or at least I haven't seen such a study in the staff reports, you can't really make a good judgment on this. You're just going to be faced with the fait accompli, the reality of what they're going to do. Let's hear some more.
This July, and this will help to ensure that we have Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 safe parking options available to those that would seek to utilize them. Next slide.
Now, he says that this is going to be done by July. That's less than a month away, or maybe through July, I don't know, in July. Why so? You know, how's he going to do this? And why such a rush when you aren't going to actually, unlikely to meet the needs of the number of vehicles in Santa Cruz that are, where people use them as their homes? And my answer to that is they're probably rushing to deal with the, and I think it's a Fort Bragg Coastal Commission meeting that's happening to consider the appeal against the OVO ordinance. And they need to have some kind of, if not evidence, at least claims that they are dealing with not just what overturned the OV ordinance last time, which was in 2015, 2016, when I was challenging it and others were as well, that there was not adequate space or coastal access for vehicles, and therefore the attempt to ban RVs at night from Santa Cruz failed. Rochelle Noroyan's proposal went down in flames, and she stalked out of the Coastal Commission and harumphed her way into the hallway. So in order to avoid this, they are trying to show more specifically that they have some kind of program which can't possibly meet the needs even of the people who live in Santa Cruz in vehicles. How in the hell can it meet the needs of RVs coming through Santa Cruz who need to have coastal access and will not be allowed to be there at night unless they're buying, I don't know, $100 to $200 hotel rooms, or they are able somehow to visit someone and then get a permit to park briefly in front of that person's house, which is those are the exceptions. These are unanswered questions, of course, and these are questions I raised 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and I think Reggie Meisler and the ACLU and Disability Coalition may be raising some of these issues as well. I haven't yet heard anything from the Santa Cruz, I haven't heard anything from the Coastal Commission. I put in a Public Records Act request to find out, and this is a kind of above and beyond this whole issue of whether this is an adequate program and whether we can show that the Coastal Commission, that this is another one of their sham attempts to claim shelters that don't really exist. But to look at rather what police are doing in violation of Coastal Commission guidelines that were set up 5 or 6 years ago when they said you can't go after vehicles, you can't set up parking requirements unless you go through the local Coastal Commission and get a permit. They haven't been doing that, and instead they've been enforcing anyway. So I put in a Public Records Act request to determine how many such citations have been issued, how many complaints has the local Coastal Commission received, how many permits have they issued for signs in the Coastal Commission, so that there in the Santa Cruz area, so that people who are the city officials can legally set up no parking without a permit type signs, which they do all over the place. And I haven't yet received an answer. I may have to get on the stick again and, stop reading comic books or something. Here's some more from my favorite comic book character, Matt Huffaker.
And then lastly, I wanted to provide a quick update on some exciting developments related to the Coral Street master planning effort. We were successful in May in completing the purchase of 125 Coral Street. This provides some real opportunities to better leverage the campus as a whole. That work will also be tied into the design charrette master plan for the campus. We expect those bids to come in on June 22nd. We will then move into a process to help inform the development of a navigation center and permanent supportive housing on that site. So more to come.
So this is a site next to the 115 Coral Street. Is it 125 Coral Street? I'm not quite sure exactly where it is, but it's, if not right next to it, it's close to it, I think. I think they already purchased something across the street. They're expanding this this bureaucratic structure, which, again, is kind of predicated on the idea not in giving people real options and opportunities, but essentially indenturing them and providing a funding source for people who are claiming to be helping homeless people, but in terms of actually either even providing them with decent, accessible shelter and services, aren't doing that for the majority of homeless folks. And they also, of course, aren't sending them on a pathway to housing, although they like to have big signs that say they are. So I think we're talking about millions of dollars spent here after, you know, where you have, $1.5 million or something spent on showers at the, that didn't get fixed for many a moon. I think have they finally fixed them? I think I'd heard they had. I'm not sure. What's needed, of course, is a real accounting of funding spent over the last 5 years for homeless funding, and both at the city and county level. by people who are dedicated and not entangled or entailed or involved in seeking funding from these same government groups, and so who are prone to be softer on them than they should be.
Part of our collective efforts to stand up additional sheltering options and permanent facilities. And that's all I had for you this morning. Happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions from council members? Councilmember Myers?
I don't want to disclose anything that wouldn't be appropriate, but I'm just curious, just for the public, is it still a continuing investigation into the destruction of the city staff vehicles?
As Councilmember Myers, I don't have additional details that I can share at this time, but our police department, along with our fire department, are actively investigating that incident.
And
again, it's the destruction of Parks and Rec property. Again, the Parks and Rec in the past has been the gang that runs around destroying and confiscating homeless property, and so it's not really a great leap of comprehension to understand why they might become a target, particularly if they're going to be the people involved in clearing the benchlands without any real place for people to go. It's like people coming to demolish your home, but having no place for you, having no legitimacy, and claiming that everything is rosy. It excites anger, and perhaps legitimate anger. And, of course, Donna Myers wishes to mobilize the law and order crowd herself and express those concerns so that she can, either she believes this is more important than shelter, she must. I think she does. I think that's what it is. Let's take another musical break.
More and more of the people aren't able to get the health care because their states have opted out of it are going to move to the coast. And these are the people that are the blue people moving from the purple states, so the purple states will become red. The red people don't like purple. It's too much like lavender, frankly. And the blue people are going to go to the coast. Coasts are going to get very blue, and then the water, Eskimos melted, sidewalks are going to come down, and it's going to go up, and there's going to be mass foreclosures on the, but only on the coast, so it won't actually affect any Americans.
The TPP will trick you. Esta no olvides. This global banker's wet dream. Es NAFTA en esteroides. Local laws suspended. Environment, who cares? You prove you may say I'm a screamer. But before these guys are done, they'll give our world.
We are actually, here in North America, 5% of the world's population, and yet we consume 25% of the world's resources. How cool is that?
A haircut is something that we gave Greece, as I recall.
Oh, that is
well,
true.
It's a technical term. It's we're also going to give them a shave and two bits, uh-huh. And they're on their own.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And you get the country as a result, right?
I get the countries. All countries are mine. Countries.
Everyone understands it's hard to be gay in America. Actually, harder, statistically, than to be black in America. Think about this. If you're black, actually, you don't have to tell your mother. Think about that.
Like a chief executive in a corporation, his job is chiefly to execute the workers. Uh-huh. And the workers' job is... Well, the workers don't have a job yet.
Judgeship in the window, the one with the balancing scales. How much is that judgeship in the window? I do hope that judgeship's for sale.
You may know that that West Virginia split off from Virginia in order to side with the North in the War of Northern Aggression against the state's rights to have people having other people,
right?
Which was a culture in those days.
That was a often inaudible sampler of Dave Lippmann. If you watch the video, you can actually follow the words, and I encourage people to do it if you liked what little you could understand of it. I'll probably find a few songs that you'll be able to understand, but let's proceed with the brilliant questions asked of Matt Huffaker about his plans to denude the benchlands, but not in July, maybe August or the end of the summer, whenever that is. Might be a very long summer.
I don't want to disclose anything that wouldn't be appropriate, Myers. But I'm just curious just for the public. Is it still a continuing investigation into the destruction of the city staff vehicles?
As Councilmember Myers, I don't have additional details that I can share at this time, but our police department, along with our fire department, are actively investigating that incident.
And that's the usual kind of police department double talk that you get when you ask questions about what's going on. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the rights of protecting individuals or even furthering an investigation, but it does continue to maintain the kind of sanctity and sanctum and inaccessibility that allows the police department and the city manager maximum flexibility.
And with regards to the bench lands, I'm just curious for the public, as we're able to find folks moving into other accommodations or shelters, either here locally or I'm assuming we are also, I saw in the recent reports that the county has also some 200 and some odd, 290 housing vouchers. So, you know, with this big effort about the rehousing wave and trying to get people into more stable situations,
But before we let her finish her sentence, housing vouchers do not equal places where people can actually get housing. And that is what I increasingly hear about. I don't have any figures on it, but I don't know that anyone asks the question at this council, and have people had any problems finding housing, either inside the city, inside the county, or outside the county? That would be relevant. Let's hear some stats about that. But I don't think that was asked or answered.
What is our call? What is the strategy about someone coming back because they either didn't accept the shelter or they felt it was, you know, wasn't accommodating maybe of their pets? I don't know exactly, you know, but, you know, I'm just curious if we are trying to, you know, move people out of the benchlands into other facilities and shelter, et cetera. I'm assuming that at some point, you know, we sort of, in a sense, have to kind of put up a close sign, in a sense.
Which, of course, has been Donna's entire program for the last, 4 years or longer. Still, what's missing from this, of course, it's all about getting rid of the people in the benchlands. That's her focus. And that's really a minority of the people who are homeless in Santa Cruz. I mean, it's a large minority for sure, but it's a minority. And therefore, what you might ask would happen if somebody else arrives gets dumped from their housing, has to pay a medical bill they can't afford, gets kicked out of a family situation, whatever, and who lives in Santa Cruz and who has to get into a sleeping bag, doesn't have a vehicle to live in, or their vehicle was taken by police, or their vehicle suddenly didn't have enough operational material to be able to maintain its legal status, and they go to the benchlands. Those people, and we don't have any indication of whatever the stats are about how many they are, but I would assume there are a larger number of people than who currently are in the benchlands. What about them? And she has no interest in them, asks no questions about them. And I don't think others do either, but let's listen on.
Because that is not a sustainable site, obviously, long-term because of flooding and all the other things that, unfortunately, we've learned over the years. I'm just curious about how we are managing anyone who's trying to come back into that site and whether or not they are redirected or how we manage that.
Which is a very genteel way of putting, how the fuck can you get these assholes out of town? I know that sounds rather crude, and that's not what she's literally saying, but she's not asking about alternate shelters that are actually going to be available above and beyond the obvious numbers that are provided and to meet the actual need. That's not her question, which would be the obvious question. The obvious is not something they want to ask about because it reveals their deficiencies. It reveals the really fundamental deficiencies of Meyer's plan because she is the queen pin in this all.
Yeah, so I would respond with a couple of thoughts, Councilmember Myers. First and foremost, we are no longer sending individuals to the benchlands. That decision was made a few weeks ago as we moved into this closure effort.
But what about Matt? That's Huffaker talking. Where are they being sent? I mean, is there some mythical place off the coast, 2 miles they're being sent to? Swim over there and you'll find a place to rest? He isn't answering, and she's nodding approvingly.
We did discover last week that some of the individuals that had secured alternative sheltering sites for one reason or another made the decision to return to the benchlands. So that is certainly part of the challenge that we're encountering as we move through the closure. And we do think it...
And this language, part of the challenge as we move through the closure, indicates that they haven't, I presume, they didn't do anything to those individuals because they don't have any options. But I don't know. But he certainly isn't telling us what they did, and he's not really answering her question. And she, perhaps because she realizes it's going to get into shaky ground, I don't know what she's realizing or what the real background of this is, doesn't follow up. I don't think.
Warrants getting some stronger controls of the physical site in place to help ensure that once individuals are relocated, we don't have the possibility of folks repopulating the camp.
Well, again, the purpose is to make the property available to people who already have homes, who already have places to go to sleep at night, places to shelter themselves, places to be private, places to go to the bathroom, places to be against the cold. Because that's the primary objective here. Not the deal with the people who are actually in the benchlands or the people who are outside the benchlands and are having the same problems but have no shelter. So, well, I don't like that. I hope you don't either.
And the real goal here is to get all the individuals that are in the benchlands into a safe, secure, a higher standard of shelter.
And this is the mantra. The reason we're dumping everybody from the benchlands is to put everybody into a safe, secure, higher level of shelter. But in fact, what he's saying is, and again, notice his phraseology, that's the goal. This is straight out of the Susie O'Hara playbook. That's exactly what the kind of stuff she was saying, that's their goal. And she can say that with great sincerity, and so can he. except that it ignores the current realities, and therefore it's not sincere at all. It's a form of the basest kind of hypocrisy masquerading as optimism, masquerading as solutions. It's PR, both for the liberals and for the rightists, people who want to get people out of Santa Cruz, and for people who think there should be a compassionate solution and hope that the city council is working on it.
As we move forward, so we can avoid the situations we've had in the past of, those areas that are really a flood risk as we move into the winter from happening. So
vague. Situations we've had in the past. Well, you might actually learn something from the situations we have in the past, but he's not really talking about it.
That's the process we're moving towards. And, of course, all of that also overlays with the safety issues we're having. And having challenges finding contractors that are willing to operate in and around the bench lines, which is making our work more difficult.
Now, that's an interesting statement. Contractors operating in and around the bench lands, problems they're having with them, making his work more difficult. How? That would be interesting to hear. Is it because people are having a crisis of conscience and evicting people? Is it because people are resisting and saying, stay away from my tent, motherfucker, unless you got a place for me to go? So it'd be interesting to hear more details about this, but it'll be rather embarrassing, I think, to get into it in some detail if any of those two alternatives are what's really going on. Or maybe they're saying we want more money to do to move people around, or we don't quite know exactly what our legal status is in forcing people to leave who have no place to go. But we don't know, because nobody follows up on these questions. It's kind of like listening to Joe Biden talk about the Ukraine and how wonderful it is to send lots and lots of weapons to a conflict that can only result in the murder of many more Russians and Ukrainians. Anyway, I had to throw that one in because that's what I think is happening there, but you can think what you want of that. Look at the realities here in Santa Cruz and come to your own conclusions.
And my last question is, are we finding that the folks there, do we get a sense of where, one of the questions I get a lot is, are people just coming here to Santa Cruz because, there's a campsite that they can be in? Are we getting any sense from, I know we have not, I don't believe the survey from this winter has been completely vetted yet, but I'm just curious about, there's a lot of cities doing a lot of this work right now, all over California, this sort of unfortunate situation because of continued sort of non-direction from the state.
It would make it much easier, of course, to and bomb people's consciences if you're only throwing out these out-of-town, selfish vagabonds who are rushing in to use those wonderful resources in the benchlands, and they have nothing to do with our local community. But Huffaker, unfortunately, can't agree with that as much as Donna seems to be giving him a chance to do that. And this might give some of us hope that Huffaker has a few honest bones in his body. It's possible in terms of this issue, but, well, you be the judge.
Cities are now really grappling with these issues with these unfortunate folks. Are you getting a sense that people are moving in from other areas, or do we have any sense of that at all in terms of the flow of people? Or have they been there for a couple of years? Or just curious if you have any, and if we really haven't been able to census that, no worries if you don't have data or info on that.
Yeah, Councilmember Myers, I think it's a combination. The past point in time counts that you're referring to have shown that a majority of the individuals are locally rooted. Mm-hmm. We certainly know, both from the data and anecdotally, that we also have individuals that are traveling into Santa Cruz from all parts of the country. Mm-hmm. For different reasons. And as we move through the closure, part of the goal, and we're...
As we move through the closure again, he's trying to play also both sides of the road here by saying, well, you know, statistics do show that most of the folks there have lived here for a long period of time in Santa Cruz and have roots here. On the other hand, we've heard that some folks are coming, but of course, it's, I guess, he doesn't want, I mean, my interpretation is he doesn't want to lie about it. Because he's supposed to be, you know, the more objective city manager, not just, I don't know, the go-to baton and pepper spray device for the city council to remove the undesirable transient elements. But he also may feel that way himself. It's really hard to tell. And maybe I can get in future shows some indication of how he treated with this situation in Watsonville, where he was city manager before.
Doing this in tandem with the county is to stand up a mobile case management office on site, so we could do some of that triaging and case management work to get a better sense of what services individuals might be able to access, whether or not they have a family member or friend that we could help them get in contact with, and perhaps shelter. So it's really all of the above. We're going to be pursuing, you know, all options in front of us to identify those alternative sheltering options.
And this, of course, has nothing to do with the question she asked, which is, are these goddamn folks from somewhere else coming to flood our benchlands? You know, I mean, it's a legitimate question. She's curious to know that, and so are her constituents. The ones who don't want to see them there, and probably everybody else too, be curious to know what the actual factual situation is. His answer is to, again, roll out the old, we're doing all that we can. We're setting up a booth. The county will be setting up a booth, or maybe it's the city will be setting up a booth to work with case managing these folks. Of course, case managers have nothing to do with actually finding housing or having it made available or creating it. Or creating shelter, or creating campgrounds. That has nothing to do with that. It has to do with chattering with people about the issue and paying people to do more chattering. It's, I think very little of it, though I admit, and I've said that to Alicia Cole, who's been kind of a case manager type person over across the hill, where she works two jobs doing that kind of stuff, or did. Not sure if she's still employed there. Still, it has nothing to do with actual shelter, and it has nothing to do with actual housing, and it has, particularly if your main purpose is to destroy people's housing by a certain date. That's what you're planning to do.
In addition to the direct work we're doing to stand up these shelter sites.
Okay. Thank you for the report.
Thank you, Councilmember Myers. Councilmember Cummings?
Thank you for that presentation. I guess the one question I have is I'm wondering if you could describe or if you have any information on what the county is doing for the individuals who are currently at the Armory and the Oceana Hotel. The idea being that, you know, if those people end up going out on the street, that's then just another group that we're going to have to help find housing for or, you know, or shelter. And so I'm just curious if we can maybe update the community on what the county is currently doing, and maybe also the number of people that they're trying to provide alternatives for who are in those two shelters.
So, Councilmember Cummings, I'll admit that the timing of the closure of those facilities is certainly not ideal. I know it hinges on one-time pandemic funding that the county had received. That is running out as we move into the end of the fiscal year. They have committed to finding alternative locations for the individuals still residing in those locations. I don't have the number right offhand. I want to say it's around 50 individuals that are still seeking alternative sheltering sites. And of course, you know, we're wanting to ensure that the additional facilities that are being stood up at the Overlook are a net addition to total beds. And spaces that could be made available to those that need them. So outside of that, the county does have a few home key projects that are in the pipeline, one that was recently awarded up in Bonnie Doon, the Veterans Facility, but they also have two other locations, one in South County and one in Mint County, that they're in consideration for at the state level. They have also agreed, along with the investments we're making at the Housing Matters campus, that with the investment in the physical infrastructure, whether that takes the form of additional pallet shelters or some other form, that they would be willing to fund the operations associated with those additional shelter sites as another partnership opportunity. And then, of course, as part of the closure, as I mentioned earlier, we've been in conversations with Housing for Health, HSA, Health and Human Services, County Sheriff's Office, to all bring resources to bear to assist with the closure.
And this sounds like an expansion of shelter with the county supporting the pallet shelters at the Housing Matters site, additional pallet shelters. Now, some of us have been skeptical about the doghouse situation for the pallet shelters, that it's kind of a sheds, tool shed approach to housing. But it, you know, it can be construed as an improvement from harassment on the streets by police, for sure. Perhaps fighting back the rats in the benchlands. I don't know what the rat situation is looking like over at the Coral Street area. I have heard some criticism from one of our older Huff members, Thomas, who's lived in one of those shelters. But he also has some positive things to say about their pallet shelters, as they're called. I'm going to pause this because I'm going over time here. I'm surprised, actually. I thought I would have run out of steam long before this. But let's see if we can get a hold of Keith McHenry and get an analysis of, well, he's written most recently online an analysis of the City Council's latest proposals or lack of proposals at the City Council meeting. So let's see if we can catch him at an available moment. All right, so I have on the line Keith McHenry, who's, I don't know what he's doing. What are you doing, Keith?
I'm waiting for a doctor's appointment.
Okay, well, I hope you're feeling well, or getting better anyway.
I'm trying to resolve still that clubbing to the face that I got in 92.
That's, boy, long-term effects. I've got your email. AutoCare Towing is dismantling Santa Cruz Homeless Union Alicia Cool's RV after she paid the fee of $771 to recover it. And you did write about it, but do you want to give me any updates or just, I haven't read give me, what happened there, Keith?
Okay, well, this morning I got a frantic call from Eric, Alicia's partner, that their RV was gone. And they went to go get it, to move it, so that they could, because they were trying to sell it, and it was gone. So then they find out that Habee had towed it, Officer Habee.
Retired Lieutenant Joe Habee?
Yeah, I don't know if he's retired. That's what they think. Maybe, or somebody, the cops had towed it. I think Alicia said it was him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, so that they towed it, and the people at the company, Auto, whatever it is called, Care Towing, told, when I called them up, they said, well, yeah, we have to tow it because of the oversized vehicle ordinance. You're not allowed to park a RV on the streets in Santa Cruz. So I had to run around and find $771 to help her.
Let me ask you this. Did they say when they towed it, day or night?
No, they towed it early this morning.
Like, you mean in the dark hours or in the light hours?
That I don't know how early it was, but it was...
First of all, the OVO isn't being enforced, and second of all, I think it applies at night, does it not?
Yeah, that's my understanding, and is that it was supposed to be that... And there was actually somebody in it up until, last night was the first night it was not occupied. The person who had been staying at Draco had afternoon or something, didn't and, you know, moved and left. So it was just there. So this is the first, this is very similar to what happened with Dread Eye over at, you know, on Schaefer, and he was guarding our shipping container, and then them harassing him every night until he left, and then the night gone, they somebody comes and cuts the shipping container to lock off, and or the actual cat class to the shipping container, and leaves it wide open. So anyway, so she then go, you know, she, well, I get her the money, and then she goes up to pay for it. And she gives him the money, she goes out, she finds somebody underneath the vehicle taking apart the transmission. So, and she's like, then she calls the sheriff department. So when finally the sheriff department comes back, the tow guy said, oh, we always undo the, he take the transmission and everything off when we tow vehicles. Now, I've had a lot of large vehicles towed over the course of my life, oversized vehicles, and I've never had any tow company ever take any parts off of my vehicle.
Well, maybe it's a special service, Keith.
Logic of that, but that, so there's, so, you know, the thing that's rare, so I would not be surprised if they just uniformly take parts off of RVs before they junk them, because, you know, that's, they don't anticipate an unhoused person coming to get their vehicle back. And so that's what appears to happen. Now, when the sheriff department showed up, they then backtracked and said, oh, we always take transmissions off and everything when we tow vehicles. So anyway, that's the current, most recent.
Is there any legitimate reason for taking off a transmission? Why would you even claim?
I have no idea why you would do that. So the... To give them the benefit of the doubt, it would appear that they couldn't get in to unlock the vehicle, and for some reason they had to do that, but I don't know. Because maybe that's why they never take my transmission off when they tow my large vehicles, so because I have the key. But I don't know. Maybe that's the story they will have. I don't know. But anyway, it's kind of... you know, it's very frustrating. And I think that one of the biggest parts of this, and what, you know, we were are working on litigation around this, because more for the fact that the ordinance doesn't even exist, isn't to be enforced yet, because it's still before the Coastal Commission, and here they're taking oversized vehicles. But it's something also very suspicious that it's, you know, the one day somebody isn't spending the night there in all the time that, you know, and it was moved, it was not abandoned, and it had been moved in the last, like...
If we're not revealing any secrets, where was it towed from?
It was towed from Whole Foods, you know, from the from SoCal, Whole Foods, where Alicia and others have been parking for... There's no parking signs there. That's the one place, and over at... Staff of Life are the only two places in town where they haven't systematically put no overnight parking signs up. So, you know, that's why it was there.
And is there any pretext given? Was it actually done by a police department tow? How happened?
Apparently the police department called the tow company and had it towed, saying it was an abandoned vehicle.
Hmm.
But then the tow company owner, when I called the tow company owner to find out the details of how I should be suing them, you know, do they have a legal department for us to send a, you know, our lawsuit to in the name of people to sue, along with the, you know, definitely, you know, we don't want to have any bad feelings between us and Bernie, the new chief of police or anything like that. But you just really can't go around and tow people's property unless there's actually some legal basis for it. And since there was none, and we just ate seven, you know, we don't have $771 extra. You know, we're like tight as can be. We're losing all of our, you know, subscribers online donations and stuff because everybody's going broke.
What day was the vehicle towed, Keith?
It was towed this morning.
Oh, wow. And Eric is.
Jess was towed. And that's amazing that $771 for being in the custody of this tow company for, half a day.
Now, has the vehicle been damaged?
Well, we're still waiting to see there. So the sheriff kind of intimidated, fortunately, the tow company into supposedly replacing the transmission and the parts that they took off. So that hasn't been finished yet, so we don't know.
And so your vehicle has not yet been reclaimed?
Yeah, all we've done is give them a bunch of money and call the sheriff's department.
Have you had any kind of offers of legal assistance from anybody around this issue?
Not yet, no. I mean, of course, it's all just been happening all day today. And it's a drag that I spent much of today dealing with this. And I've got a ton of other things. We had a big problem today, too. We've had a bunch of people calling sick who got tested positive for COVID. People who were, So we're relying only on the unvaccinated now to keep the food not bombs going, because over vaccinated people are having trouble. So that's really frustrating, too. So,
how many people actually got sick on the food not bombs crew?
We've got three today with vaccinated people with COVID, and then we had others recently vaccinated with COVID. But there's some vaccinated people in our group that have not gotten COVID recently.
Have there been any unvaccinated people who have gotten COVID?
No, none of. Well, not since a long, long time ago. Yeah, no, we're relying 100% on, that's been. I think Delta was the last wave of anything, before now. It seems like it's picking up. It's really hardcore.
Now,
one poor guy got vaccinated, got his fourth shot, was sick for a week. Then he got, he was well for a week, and then he got COVID, and then he was at the doctor, and the doctor goes, oh, yeah, these vaccines don't work. The doctor told him.
Well, for heaven's sake.
Oh, my God. So things are falling apart.
But a number
of us have not been vaccinated.
You've also written, Keith, about reality a puzzle to Santa Cruz officials. This is a comment on the latest city council, the article by Jessica York, Benchlands Homeless Camp Closure Postponed Until Late Summer. I've been kind of running through Matt Huffaker's presentation and the city council's questioning of him, and I thought you might have some comments about anything more regarding that reality a puzzle to Santa Cruz officials.
Yeah, so that's really an interesting thing. I was writing an article based on this, on conversations I had in just one day, the first day the stock market went to the bear market. And I was doing stuff downtown, and I ran into two friends, and they were like, oh, yeah, we're up at the prison camp next to the armory, is how they put it. And they reported that the one woman said that she'd, almost lost her job because the scheduling of the van is so terrible. So I thought it was really interesting that the city manager, that the people that they offered them these places, and then they returned back to the Benchlands, and which is a funny way to say, well, our accommodations suck so bad, people would rather live in the Benchlands, was really what he's saying. And then Donna Myers is being perplexed, which is why I used the term, puzzled, because, they're so out of touch with the reality of living outside and their programs that they supposedly have, that they can't understand why people wouldn't just love living in a tent in the sun up in De La Vega and have to rely on a city van to get back and forth. And Russell and I think it was Dreamcatcher, several other people told me Jeremy Leonard sent them up there. They went up there. It was like, oh, God, this is like a prison camp, and they just came back down. They didn't even, stay there 1 second once they saw what was happening. But the other interesting thing is I counted 315 locations is what the report outlines. And places that people would go, and this would include 1220 River, this would be the Armory, this would be the you know, the camp next to the Armory, and so on.
By 315 locations, you mean six or seven locations with 315 spots?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. They can accommodate, according to the report, 315 people.
Right.
So then I asked the people up at the Armory, is there space for people? Well, they're already... Even as horrible as the accommodations are, there's already people filling all these facilities, as it turned out, basically. There's you know, there's not very many open spaces, ultimately, in and maybe none, actually. You know, it might be, but, you know, there might be 30 out of the 315, something like that. No, I haven't done an actual count at all the sites yet, but anyway, so if they're going to put 315 people from the benchlands in these locations, they've got to kick out the 315 people that are there to make way for the 315. So it's a net gain of zero, and maybe a net gain of 30, like at the most. So there's more than 30 people living in the benchlands, you know, and it's growing like rapidly. And according to the most recent statements by the city, you know, that they estimate or maybe Jessica York. No, I think the city even says there's about 300 tents in the benchlands, and that sounds accurate. It could be more than that.
Well, also, it's not just the benchlands that contains homeless people. Even though, as I said before, earlier in this netcast, it's a large minority. There's probably even more people outside in the Santa Cruz city and county. Well, certainly the city and county area, but I would say even the city area that are unsheltered.
Yeah, they have no way to you know, if they're going to stick with their plan, they have no way to accommodate people. It's just like insane. So the whole thing is fiasco, and Donna Meyer's comments, as reported by in the Sentinel, make it clear that they don't have no idea what they're doing, and that it sounds like the only thing they could do is cage people into their facilities and not let them out, and then somehow block the benchlands with a fence, and then they're going to have these 300 or 400 people have to be somewhere, and so they, you know, it's very, very sad. But it is, I think, slowly. And then the other thing is that, you know, the amount of people we're seeing, more need for food, more people. That reminds me, I have to order a whole bunch more forks. We're running out of paper products. We're, you know, it's, the whole thing is crazy. And we, you know, I would imagine in July 1st, we're going to see another wave of evicted people. It's, you know, and then if the stock market crashes, as it appears to be doing, as people are reporting that it is, you know, then there's going to be people losing their 401ks. Or, you know, before it's going to be like, as we had predicted, a huge increase in unhoused people. So they can't even deal with the people that they have now, and their plans are completely moronic and unworkable. And so I don't know what they're thinking. Not thinking very clearly anyway, so that's for sure. So that's, so now they're, you know, end of the summer, they're supposed to clear the benchlands. Well, they've got to come up with, you know, and they're also, like, on the 27th of June, they're kicking everybody out of Oceana, so that's in the works. And they're actually kicking everybody out of the Armory, but then they're supposed to, you know, because that contract's over, and then they have to rehouse the security back in the Armory. So I don't know how that's going to work either. So that's a total mess.
Keith, have you heard of anybody using the so-called Tier 2 parking lots, either parking lots 4 and 5 or 6 and 7?
No, nobody seems to be. People are angry as can be at Association of Faith Communities and their...
Jacobs?
Yeah, particularly him, but, you know, because no one qualifies, no one gets let in. You can be dequalified for having bad morals and things like that. It's like that's a mess. And then you add up all those spaces, there's really hardly any. But I think there's like
maybe 10 total in the first two tiers, and maybe 15, and then maybe 30 in the tier three, which has not been activated yet. And then where a popular place where unhoused people were parking their vehicles and paying $5 to do so was next to the Red Church, and that parking lot got, you know, is now cleared. And then all these, like, alleged low-income housing, that one, they're probably not low-income, and two, even if they rush as fast as they can to make some, they're, you know, what, there's one that's like 100 people maybe over by, you know, on Coral Street. That's not going to happen by August. Then there's like one that's another 60 people in Soquel. That one won't be done by August. You know, that one, they haven't even broken ground on those two things. And it's likely that the one that, those are the only two that are really low income. Then there's some, I don't know what the one on Capitola and Live Oak is, you know, that has Dientes at it. I don't know what the actual thing is there, if that's going to be something people can move into. That one is kind of on its way, but I've not seen any reference in any city or county information that that is for unhoused people to become housed. So it's, you know, and then here's another interesting thing, is I noticed that, you know, because my girlfriend was working as a social worker both here in Santa Cruz County and in Santa Clara County, and in Santa Clara County, they actually have a bit more resources, and people can get housing, you know, in these places, although they're kind of crazy. You know, Alicia works over there so as well in these supportive housing programs. But, you know, we hear the story that, oh, the services are, you know, if we built things here in Santa Cruz, come here. But I'd have never heard of anybody in Santa Cruz going to Santa Clara to get housing because they got all these great services over there, which they do have better services than Santa Cruz County, but for homeless people. But again, that myth is, you know, completely proven to be a myth by that you could take the 17 bus and go over there and then get yourself some housing, and, you know, are more likely to get yourself housing. But there's still like tens of thousands of people over there in the south.
One of the things that I guess Huffaker has said, or maybe, yeah, I think it's Huffaker, in his city manager's report, which we've been following, is that they're, they cited the number of housing vouchers. And I know that you and I have both, you've been skeptical about housing vouchers. I've heard some people who've been able to get access to housing vouchers, but I've heard generally, there's also a story going around that it is not, there's a lot of vouchers, but people aren't taking the vouchers. What's your experience with that, and from the counts you've heard?
No, okay. Well, I would tell you, like, for instance, Blue. He got a housing voucher. He was all excited. He thought he had housing. He went to Ben Lomond or Felton to go to the house that they told him he had. He gets there. He spends one night in the house, and then the landlord comes in the next day. Oh, you're not family. You're not allowed to be here. You're out of here. I actually hear a lot of people get housing vouchers. But very rarely do people get housing.
Now, how many
housing
people?
Vouchers, nothing.
Do you have any actual numbers of people who said to you, "I got a voucher, but I couldn't get housing"?
I don't know the numbers, but I can give you the number the other direction that I've met. You know, I think there's three or four people total that I know who had housing vouchers who did get housing. So, you know, like. So that's what I know. But in each one of those, the three people that I know that did get housing with a housing voucher actually went to their own a realtor to get the housing. Their case managers were of no help whatsoever.
Interesting.
So that's, and they had, you know, so that's how that goes, yeah.
Well,
I know Uncle Jeff had a housing voucher. He was told that he could be in this place in Watsonville. He got there. I think he didn't even last 30 days before he was.
I've heard that Jeff was assaulted and robbed a couple of times in the Benchlands recently. Is that accurate?
He wasn't. The Uncle Jeff that I know doesn't sleep in the Benchlands, but he has been beaten a number of times. Yeah.
Was he?
And then the other sad thing, unfortunately, I'm going to have to go after this little tale, but the Kevin, I ran into Kevin the other day, who has all the goats. Well, the city, the
animal control took all his goats. And he's so devastated, so he ended up getting through Encompass a bus ticket back to Vermont, and he's just had it. He's devastated. Those are his family, and they said it was animal abuse, but if anybody knows Kevin and the goats, there was definitely not animal abuse. So that was tragic. I mean, there's
What I asked about Jeff was because I'd heard that he was assaulted in the Benchlands. Is that there are some people who claim it's the Benchlands is a dangerous place. What have you heard about that?
Well, the Benchlands is pretty insane, yeah. But I don't think it's this. I think it's most of the people I know that get beat up or beat up just randomly around town. Now, some of those people may be from the Benchlands that are getting beat up. And occasionally there's fights there, but it seems like it's, relative to how intense it is to be crammed in together with all kinds of people with different, addictions and abilities and resources and all kinds of things like that. A lot of people are not wanting to live in the Benchlands, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But there's no place else to go, so that's where they go. But I don't think it's any particularly more violent than it is anywhere else in town if you're living outside.
Well, speaking of going, I'm going to let you go since this was supposed to be a 10-minute interview, and we covered a lot more, and I appreciate you doing it.
Yeah, so we need volunteers desperately because we are having many problems with...
People should show up at the town clock, or they should show up earlier. What should they do?
Yeah, come at about 11:30 to 11:45 to the town clock, 7 days a week, and we will put you to work. So.
Thank you, Keith.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And to conclude this, let's hear a song by Dave Lippman in his Wild Bill Bailout character. I think it's... I'm quite sure what the name of this song is. Let's see if I can figure it out. Well, the lyrics are quite clear, so I'll let the lyrics speak for themselves.
You spell subprime.
Let's try that again.
Once I built a mortgage, made it run, made it race against prime. Once I built a mortgage, now it's done. Brother, can you spell subprime? Once in sharkskin suits, gee, we looked swell. Full of that Yankee doodly don't. A half a million fools went into debt hell. I was the cat with the loan. Say, don't you remember they called me Alan, Hank, Larry and Tim. Say, don't you remember I'm your pal? Brother, can you spare a diamond? When citizens default, I triple lock my vault. But some of my homies are too big to fail. Supersize their bonus, on the poor I'll put the onus. Anything to keep my broker's ass out of that jail. Unprecedented failure of our national securities. We must discover who could be to blame. Could be Obama, Osama, or your mama. Heads we win, tails you lose. Main Street's cool, but Wall Street rules. Won't you purchase our paper? Please do, I insist. If you don't like it, buddy, well, default swap this. Paulson fit the battle at Goldman Sachs and Wall Street's tumbling down. If there's no remaining capital, what happens to our ism? I never thought I'd ever see the day when government has a role to play. But it's true, we're all set. We can wash away the debt and profit if not learn from our collapse. I love shooting craps. Housing bubbles, don't you whine, makes me happy like a landmine. Lehman was lynched merrily in the oh-so-stern bear market. bail out the banks and offer thanks. Don't gross. The economy's just lost one half of its worth, and you've only lost your house. Profits all gone, it was the era of the get. Now it's time for socialism of the debt. As for the paradox of deleveraging, which leads to alcoholic beveraging, the way to explain it to you nice, is that the selling of trash drives down prices. We need a clean plan, not just a mean plan. Why penalize the poor rich people who have lost more than you mortgage moochers ever could have? It's not like the sky is falling, though it's true your roof is gone. All is not lost. But as it says in the sonnet, doggone it, we're working on it. There's no shortage of reportage on our mortgage meltdown, so why not keep the next phase of the bailout on the down low? You'd never miss a million, and you cannot spell quasillion, so why not leave it up to those who caused it, those who lost it, those who reverse Santa Claused it, who believe in the American dream? Especially the part about the Ponzi scheme. A nation of whiners gets no golden parachute. When we're through, you will be lucky if you've got a birthday suit. So what if we were all in a hypnotic trance, from which we awoke with the collapse of the tallest towers of finance? Well, Rome wasn't built in a day. I know I drove this country into a train wreck, but I feel a sudden need for a blank check. So please, won't you buy my... What's that Yiddish word I'm looking for? Track, not Shrek! Have no fear, we won't let it happen again this year.
And that last was a song by Dave Lippmann about Timothy Geithner, spelled G-E-I-T-H-N-E-R, who was an American central banker who served as the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury under President Barack Obama, 2009 to 2013, President of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York from 2003 to 2009, following service in the Clinton administration. And he has since March 2014 served as president and managing director of Warburg Pincus, a private equity firm headquartered in New York City. Key role in government efforts to recover from the financial crisis of 2007 and 8 and the Great Recession. And this is the Wikipedia analysis, which makes me pretty much concerned that it's the bailout the banks guy. So I think that's what old Dave Lippmann was singing about. That's it for this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Thanks for listening. No guarantees I'll be back on Sunday, but if you have any comments or you have any news reports, you know where to phone them in. 831-423-HUFF, 423-4833.